This is Notes from a Native Daughter. I am Sol Danela. My guest today is Sarah Sandman. Such a melodic name, Sarah Sandman. My heart opened up to her in 2011 when I met her at Hostos Community College. At the time, we were both in full-time positions at the college, and she was working in a project on and about the creative economy with her students, and it was so beautiful and poetic. And then she did another project, and it was the concept of studying abroad and with the students that she was teaching, and it was also incredibly beautiful. And then she just creates these experiences and views the world in such a way that has moved me, and I admire her. And she also created the logo for Notes of a Native Daughter, and I'm very proud. And she has a lot to say, and I am joining her with Brick by Brick, the project that she will talk about here and for the Women's March next week. And I'm very excited about it, and I am so happy that you're giving me this time. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Sol. So good to be here.
Yeah. So talk about Brick by Brick. How did it come about?
Sure. So my work has always been about facilitating vehicles for collective expression. And what I mean by that is tapping into the emotional climate, the cultural climate that we're all sharing, and trying to find a way to express ourselves together. So I'll just kind of backtrack on some of my projects to explain that a little bit more, because I know it can be abstract without examples. In 2008, I did a bike right for Obama in Providence, Rhode Island, and I bike right, W-R-I-T-E. And so what we did was my collaborator and I gathered, Jill Peterson, gathered people in Providence, Rhode Island, about 50 people, and created a bike route that spelled via the way we rode through the streets, "Yes, we can." And it connected three distinct neighborhoods. So as we rode, if you recorded via GPS, we were writing out the words, "Yes, we can." And we had about 50 people plus the mayor, and you know, it was just one of these really magical moments where we were all feeling the spirit of Obama and really wanted to communicate that excitement together. And there's something about riding in the streets with total strangers, and we'd have people join us as we went by. We'd have kids run and ask their moms if they could join. We'd throw a t-shirt on them, show them the map, and it just became this really beautiful moment of community coming together. And so, but again, it was, we could have just kind of had signs in our yard and, you know, be cheering for Obama on our own or on, you know, social media. But to come together and say, hey, we're so excited about this through a bike ride that was communicating an idea, it was really powerful. So the same idea of collective expression came about in 2014 after Mike Brown and Eric Gardner were killed by the hands of the law enforcement, and the non-indictment ruling of Eric Gardner here in New York basically ignited the Millions March for Black Lives Matter. And my students at Hostos and I, along with the, I collaborated with the Black Studies program, we created signs in the shape of hands, oversized hands, and to speak to the idea of hands up, but also there were words on these hands that the students got to pick what their sayings were, so there was that were printed on the hands. So it was this idea of individual expression within the collective, to be able to, you know, have your own statement. And then there was this sea of hands at the protest. And, you know, it was much different than just having a regular protest sign, because we were unified through these hands but had individual sayings that were important to us. And they really stood out. Sort of. So getting to, so we get to, you know, 2016, and we have Donald Trump, and he is the Republican nominee, And I can't for the life of me figure out how I'm going to respond to this. There's so many different angles we could respond to.
Yeah.
And, but I thought, you know, okay, the thing that was really triggering me was his statements about women and his misogyny, and that we could possibly have a candidate for president.
Who gets away with it?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I kept playing around with these ideas, and finally I had a dream one night that women were wearing these coordinated outfits together. They were kind of these ridiculous yellow spandex outfits. And I was just kind of laughing to myself the next morning, like, that was hilarious, that was weird. But then I started thinking, like, well, what about the idea of costumes? What about the idea of wearables? Mm-hmm. I'd never really played in that space before.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the wall became a symbol of his divisiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And so playing off that wall is a symbol. I mean, I'm a designer. I'm constantly looking for symbols that communicate. And so that wall kept coming back to me, the image of the wall. And I thought, well, what if women are the wall and Trump has to pay for it? And so, yeah, I thought, well, let's make a human wall of women that says we're not okay with this. And then there was another spin off this, was this idea of colorful patches that go on these. So let me rewind there. Mm-hmm. So the idea then was to, if we were going to be a human wall, I was like, okay, well, we need to do jumpsuits then, to cover our bodies. And I found an amazing costume designer in my studio building. It was totally serendipitous. Her name is Andrea Lauer,
mm-hmm.
award-winning costume designer. And we'd seen each other in the building and said hi in the elevator. And just, I thought, oh, this girl's cool and, you know, loved to be her friend and knew she worked in costumes and wearables. And so I brought this idea of jumpsuits to her. And I was like, look, I don't even know where to start. I don't know how you make a pattern for something like this. And I was showing her this jumpsuit that I liked online. And she was like, oh, that's funny, because I actually designed that jumpsuit.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
That wild. It was that wild. So yeah, a woman in my building that I had been like sketching on these blank jumpsuits, just kind of as something that I really liked, you know, having no idea how to translate this forward. I was just playing in Photoshop with these blank jumpsuits, and here's the jumpsuit designer.
Wow.
And so the jumpsuits were really important too. And I mean, Andrea can speak to this more, but you know, the first time women wore pants was in World War II going to work. And so there's symbolism in the idea of a jumpsuit as well. Not only that it would allow brick patterns to cover our entire body, because a jumpsuit, obviously, we could have a pattern going from top to bottom, but, you know, that it's symbolic of women in the workforce. And so this was also part of our narrative. And yeah, so people listening, I guess I forget that I have to describe the visual. You won't be able to see it, but So the jumpsuits that we wear to build these walls,
they can see it in the on the website.
Oh, okay, great.
Brick, great. By brick.org.
Yeah, it's brick and then the letter X, brick.org.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these jumpsuits covered in brick patterns, and then then they were colorful. Andre had this great idea. She was like, well, you know, I was kind of thinking about people kind of writing on their bricks,
mm-hmm.
But it was going to be hard to control and finding the right way to get people the materials to write on it. And she was like, well, why don't you do patches?
Mm-hmm.
And so we started out talking about this idea of iron-on patches. I was out to dinner with my friend Joey, and I was like, what do these patches say? And he was like, well, come back to the concept. It's about his misogyny. And I was like, oh, it's his statements.
Mm-hmm.
That's what goes on. The things he said about women, being dogs, being slobs, being bimbos, a woman who is flat-chested.
Yeah.
Or rather, it's a person who's flat-chested can never be a 10. If Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her.
Yeah, he's so disgusting.
And it's you know, once you put them all in one space,
yeah.
So we printed these statements on these colorful bricks that we then apply to our patch, or the patches we apply to our jumpsuits. And, you know, people said to us, they were like, why are you giving this more airtime? Which is a really great question. Really great question. But the concept was, well, it doesn't, it become, they're not sound bites anymore. They're real when we wear them on our body. These are real that are triggering to people. These are real. And when they're collected and, you know, not just one that you're reading, but you put them all together and you put them on our bodies, it mirrors it back too. Yeah. It makes people face them and say, this isn't a joke. This is, you know, something a presidential candidate and now president-elect has said. You know, to have someone say and, you know, admit to sexual assault and have that recording and then wear the words, grab them by the pussy on your body. It makes people really have to own that.
Yeah.
You have to own it when you see it on someone's body. So yeah, Andrea Lauer has been critical to this project, and she's my co-director, and of course I want to make sure that she gets proper credit for this, because once I found her, it was just like magic. We just took off with it. It really was just this serendipitous moment where she just happened to be in the building, the design I liked, she had made it. And it's also really important to tell you how the suits were made.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend Joey Foster Ellis is an incredible artist. He is a TED fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And he lives in Kathmandu, and he had done this really great project with these artisans, these tailors, these male tailors in Kathmandu who helped to make uniforms for school children.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to source these suits in the U.S., and as I was looking at companies and I dig further, I'd realize, oh, they're just sending them over to India. They're not going to make it here. And that was a problem for me. So if I was going to make it overseas, I needed to know who was making it. And I needed to know that they were compensated properly. So I had Joey on the ground with this incredible team of artisans, and they're all male artisans. And we have great video of them talking about, you know, their dislike for Trump, their support. You know, they were in support of Hillary, they were against Trump, and they were, you know, we had an all-male, and they were doing what is typically women's work, you know, sewing. And so they're talking about what it means to do women, quote-unquote, women's work. And yet here they're making us jumpsuits to wear. And it was just this really, I mean, it's an international story. And they're pieces of art. They made art. They didn't just sew our jumpsuits. I mean, these are, we have... I'm just like you would a collection of printed pieces. You know, if a printmaker was making pieces, like you'd have 200 prints and you'd write like 1/200, 2/200 in the edition. Well, they did that for us. And we said, you know, we want this to be a print edition. They silk screened all of these suits. I mean, they're absolutely gorgeous. They are literally works of art in themselves. And so there's a pride in wearing these as well in that story. I always make sure that that's given credit and their voices are heard in this.
Yeah. Congratulations. I mean, it's beautiful to see all of that you have done with all these incredible people, sincerely. So now the march next week, are you excited? Are you expectant?
Yeah. It has been a lot of work, so I'm now just starting to really visualize what it may look like. Of course, you can never completely do that, but I'm trying to, you know, foresee all the different problems. I mean, you know, this type of art form is a lot about, the majority of it, I will say, is about community organizing. And I have mad respect for community organizers. I mean, I run a company, and so this is my other full-time job, though I don't get paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
It has been so much work, and we are all so excited. We have...
over 100 people, right?
Yeah, we have about 140 people coming. We have 17 states represented, 18 mm-hmm. if you want to include Canada, which I would love to.
Mm-hmm.
They are part of us. They are partners. And so, yeah, we have a wide range of geographic representation. And to have all these people come together that have never met before is just going to be incredible. And I have to say that some of the people coming, which is really, really cool, are women that wrote us, particularly this group of women from Virginia Beach,
mm-hmm.
who found Brick by Brick and wrote us and said, hey, we would love to make one of our own walls. And we were like, absolutely. And so we sent them suits and sent them patches, and they created their wall on their own. And that was what started to get really cool in the fall. So I should rewind a little bit. We built, before going to the march, we built walls in 8 different states in the U.S. And a lot of times Andre and I would be there organizing them. But then several times, like these women in Virginia Beach, they created their own wall. Women in Ann Arbor created their own wall, Columbus, Ohio, Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And so it became this movement where we didn't even have to be there. We would just send these kits. Mm. And so now we get to all come together. And so many women that have participated in their own cities, we're now meeting up. And I don't know what that's going to be, and that's the excitement. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm most excited about, you know, what kind of connections can happen there now that these women are meeting and are making these connections. Where do they go from there? And that's a huge part of this.
Yeah,
it's making a statement about Trump, but it's bringing people together that are affected by this.
Yeah.
And letting them share space to mourn, to build community, to build resistance, to figure out what they're going to do next, to find partnerships. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, definitely is the first step of action, you know. I mean, that's why I'm moved to go. I must be there, you know.
It's going to be life-changing.
Yeah.
It will be life-changing. I mean, it's not just about how other people are perceiving us, but it's what we're going to feel when we're there, and it's going to be transformative for all of us there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's so much at stake right now.
There's so much at stake.
Everything.
And we're all panicked. Yes. We don't know what to do. You know, I think it's good to have this moment of pause and coming together where we just come together and say, okay, we've spent these last a little over 2 months now by the time it happens, you know, mourning and in our social media bubbles. And to be around human beings and collectively mourn and collectively get ready and also collectively mourn and start to feel strength for action. Like, we need this step before now we can start saying, okay, my job moving forward is this. I'm going to participate in local politics. My job is I'm going to be working in climate change. You know, we can't do all the fights. So we're going to all have to kind of choose where we're going to put our energy, but to all come together and have this moment of collective energy before going out and mm-hmm. doing our own individual fights, I think is, we need this restorative moment after such an upsetting 2 months that we've had to just bear witness to this.
Yeah, it's despicable. Do you remember on the eve of the Iraq war and all the protests that happened around the world?
Yeah. Yes.
I was telling my good friend last night that I thought about that moment yesterday because I was so, you know, I'm so aware and so sensitive and feel, you know, vulnerable when I think of and read and am aware of everything that's happening. And I thought about when the war was coming and all the world came up and was against this war that was a lie. And the government dismissed these protests, like the media, everyone like dismissed us as, like, I think the quote was focus groups. And I remember thinking, like, I think people felt so sort of hung, you know, hung dry. And I haven't felt like a moment of that sort of impetus again, you know, come about. And it's inspiring and beautiful. And there's so many great voices out there. And, you know, your project is one of them. And it's amazing and beautiful. And thank you.
Of course. Thank you. I'm so excited to have you joining us. I am just honored and thrilled and just can't wait for you to meet these other amazing men and women that will mm-hmm. be marching with us.
Yeah. I look forward to it. So Sarah, to go back a little bit to one of the things that I think, you know, one of the reasons I think you're so exceptional, because I loved what you were working with when you did the study abroad program in Messiah, New York, with the students.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Sure.
I love that project.
Oh, thank you. So it was a project that I had collaborated with my colleague, Catherine Lewis. She's a professor also in media design at Hostos Community College. And, we were just remarking on how we were privileged enough to have a study abroad experience in our undergrad. And it really has informed my work and who I am. I studied abroad at a type school in Germany. And Catherine went to China. And just to have that cultural perspective was huge. And we were like, man, we just don't have the budget to take our students abroad per se. And, they work full-time jobs, a lot of them. And, at a community college, it's just it's not as common to have study abroad programs, unfortunately. And a lot of our students just, couldn't take a semester away. They have children, they have jobs, on top of going full time to school. But I just felt it was so important to for them to have something similar to study abroad. And so I became kind of obsessed with this idea of study local, and how could we get out of the South Bronx and only go 2 to 3 hours outside of the city and give them a totally different cultural experience. And so that's what we did. And our first one, we went to Massmoka in North Adams, Massachusetts. And
Oh, yeah.
yeah, so it was incredible. We took 14 students with us. The Bureau for Open Culture, a really cool art, how would I even describe them? A collective, an art project. James Voorhees, he invited us to come, and he was doing a project in kind of this abandoned warehouse at the museum, and said, "Hey, you can have part of our space. We're exploring cultural laborers, and what that means to be part of the cultural workforce." And so we had our students explore the idea of cultural workers, and had them go around North Adams, Massachusetts, and interview people that were soap makers or saddle makers or musicians, visual artists, dancers. And then they took all of these interviews and met these incredible people that they would have never met in the South Bronx, just going 2 hours north, and a totally different world. And they made this incredible collective exhibition in this abandoned warehouse at Massmoka, and it was phenomenal. Yeah, it was phenomenal. So then Catherine and I were really excited about this idea. So we then the next year went to Wassaic, New York, to the Wassaic Project. And so we kept picking these cultural institutions, art institutions that would invite us that were within, a 300-mile radius around New York City, to keep, be fiscally responsible and mindful of our students' time, but have enough time away and have a different enough cultural experience from the Bronx. And then the final year, we went to Arts, Letters, and Numbers, which is just outside of Albany. And that was incredible. I mean, that time we had students from RISD and students from Denmark there, students from Puerto Rico. They were all doing a project already at Arts, Letters, and Numbers. So here, it wasn't just our students. They got to mix up with all of these other incredible, creative students, and they really felt like, oh, we are good enough. We belong here. We can do this. We're part of this. And so, that was a really magical moment. So yeah, that was Design Lab. And again, the idea of just, you don't have to go abroad to have a totally different cultural experience. And not just for students, for ourselves too.
But then also, what was incredible too was what you created out of that, what they created during the experience, the exhibit. But then there was this video. I remember this beautiful video. Oh my God. Remember that one?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was from Arts, Letters, and Numbers.
That was just, oh, breathtaking.
Yeah, so they, that was so fun. they did a lot of collective making. They did a lot of individual making. They did animation. They shot images, and then, you know, the students then produced this incredible video from their experience staying at Arts, Letters, and Numbers, and what they saw and what they were responding to.
Mm-hmm.
Included dance, included nature, music, their interactions with their new friends.
Yeah,
that was really magical to have that all come together. And this was part of the design lab was, it's not that students are going to make individual projects like they do in class. This was, we are going to create a book together. We're going to make a movie together. We're going to put on an exhibition together.
Mm-hmm.
And we as a group have to decide what this is going to be. And we always explored one term. Was always kind of our lens for curating whatever this piece was. So we explored the idea of a cultural worker at Mass MoCA, the idea of a gift economy in Wissahick, New York, and the idea, the concept of a kora in Chora, it's a Greek word, kind of the magical space between performers. And so that's where that video came from, but always having this one theme that the students were responding to and having to collectively make something, not individual responses, even though they'd explore on their own, but then how did those individual responses come together and learn how to really collaborate? Because that's more of a real world experience. And, you know, also to have our students out in nature, that was huge too. I mean, they all said, gosh, just having windows,
yeah,
and trees, I feel like my mind was open. I was thinking differently. I was thinking, you know, I had the space to really be creative and not all of the pressure that I have back at school, back at home, with my job, with my kids, and really just let them have that space to love that creative part of themselves and celebrate that. And, you know, they all say we learned more in that week than a semester or a year at school. Mm-hmm. And so I think as educators, we really need to look at models like that and think about our impact.
Yeah. It's beautiful. So the idea of Kora, where did you come up with that? Or how did you evolve from gift economy to Kora?
Mm-hmm. So Kora actually came from the group at Arts, Letters, and Numbers. They were doing a piece. We usually, whatever is kind of going on at the cultural institution, we are responding to. So they were exploring the idea of Kora. And so it's always about coming into this cultural institution and kind of responding to what they're exploring so that the students can be part of whatever that cultural institution is doing. So at Mass MoCA, you know, they were already exploring cultural workers. And so we were like, okay, well, how are you all going to respond to this? Wissahick is, Wissahick gift economy actually came from, I had done an art residency at Wissahick, and it was all about what I was working on was all about the idea of gifts and art as a gift and art existing, you know. There's a great book by Lewis Hyde called The Gift. And it's all about art being able to exist in the market economy, but also in a gift economy and also in both of those. So that making and creating art is a gift to the world. And so I wanted my students to explore that.
That's so beautiful. I mean, art can change the world. It is us, the artists, and I believe that process.
Yeah, I really do believe that. I think we plant seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we plant seeds.
Ways of speaking to one another that are nonviolent.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And just working, you know, when you're struggling, with a problem, and just rather than trying to talk it out, to try to work that problem out through art, you just come to such different conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
And such different perspectives of going through that process. It's not just about the final product, but it's the process to get there. Yeah. So,
That's kind of a nice fold.
yeah.
I like that as an ending to this lovely conversation.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
look forward to next week. Thank you again.
Thank you, Sol. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
It's
So
going to be magical. It
it's good.
really is. Magical togetherness is what we're going to experience.
Amen. Okay.
Thank you.